We recently told the story, or started the story, of a New York bartender named Bob Bozic and his quest to inherit a mansion. The mansion happens to be in Belgrade, Serbia, and it was taken from his family more than 70 years ago. A quick recap. Bozic's father was very wealthy, but he fled to Canada after the communists came to power in Yugoslavia. Bob was born in pretty tough circumstances. He was a foster child, he was a runaway, and he grew up to be a professional boxer. Later, he was a bank robber and delivered medical supplies to the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. For more than a decade, Bob Bozic has been trying to get the Serbian government to give his father's mansion back. New Yorker staff writer Nick Palmgarten wrote about that mission, and at the beginning of this year, Bozic called Nick with pretty big news. He'd quit his bartending job, and then he got on a plane to Europe and tried to close the deal.
So here's Bob Bozic, leaving his life in New York to reclaim this place that was taken from his family back in 1946. Serbia wants to join the European Union. To do so, it has to follow restitution laws requiring the return of property taken, quote-unquote, illegally by the communists. And so, after years of legal and bureaucratic battles, Bob has gotten almost all the necessary approvals from the various levels of government. Almost.
I've been at them every few years. Everybody, why do you keep doing this? Like, you know, because this is what I do. Everything was just a preparation for the final fight. And this is my final fight.
So off he goes. He promises to keep in touch. The very next day, voice memos start pouring in from him, sometimes several a day. Bob's Belgrade diary.
Okay, Nick. Gonna give you a summary here. So I arrive in Belgrade. I go to the house. I walk in, and it's like a ghost. It's like, it's not returning to my past. It's like returning to my castle in the sky.
So what I learned today was something interesting. I'm actually a political pawn.
I'm gonna go home and read my books, and they've turned off the electricity and the heat. So it begins. Now they decided that, you know what, this guy in New York, another few weeks in the dark and cold isn't going to hurt him.
So it's going to be a while, just waiting in this 22-room house.
I live in the library, which has quilted leather doors, surrounded by Austrian-Hungarian carved bookshelf.
Bob starts sending me memos he records while walking through the house.
So leaving my house constitutes the big wooden door at the front.
Walking out of the house.
You can hear the lock.
Walking down the street.
Right by, as I pass by the Turkish embassy, which is, well, two doors away from my house.
Getting coffee.
Dobrodan. Yeah, this is the coffee place. Dobrodan. They look at me bewildered. I'm going to have some coffee.
These memos are like postcards. Half amazement at what he's seeing and half expressions of homesickness.
Yesterday, after an evening of dinner by myself, walked along the dark streets. They're very dark here. Fumbled with my latch key. Three doors to get into my house. A 22-room house, you have one room. The rest of the house is dark. Outside is the crying and the screaming of feral cats. So many times I've woken up and put on a flashlight and said, "Who's there? Who's was? Oh, excuse me." And it turns out they're outside, but they sound like they're right there. and it's a recipe for madness. And then this morning, I wake up and I phone my lawyer. So saying, okay, what's going on with the signing? And he says, you know, Bob, you have to understand, this is the process here. I said, the process sounds like the trial by Kafka. So 4 months of this and I should be mad.
Being in Belgrade, in this house, really got Bob to start thinking about his father. Dobrovoj Bozic was born in 1886, studied in Germany with Rudolf Diesel and Albert Einstein, and knew Nikola Tesla. In the 1920s, he invented an air brake system that allowed trains to travel at higher speeds. The Bozic brake revolutionized train travel throughout Europe, and the Bozic family became very wealthy. They owned a yacht, a coal mine, a timber farm. That's when they bought the mansion Bob's gone back to reclaim. Then came the Second World War. The Germans took over the house, and the Bozic family lived uncomfortably alongside them. Remember, Bob wasn't even born yet. After the war, Tito and the communists came into power and accused Bozic Sr. of cooperating with the Germans. The communists seized control of the house, and Bozic Sr., fearing execution, fled with his family to Italy in a small skiff rigged with sheets as sails. The family eventually settled in Ontario, where Bob was born. But just a few days afterwards, his father left the family, and his mother gave Bob up to foster care. Bob never knew his father, who eventually made his way back to Serbia and spent the rest of his life there. Bob's connection to it all was always kind of notional, a story for him to tell. But, living in his father's old house, Bob begins to find traces of his family's history everywhere.
On the front gate, there's a letter D in Cyrillic and then letter B in Cyrillic. Dobrovoy Bozic. It's still the original gates from 1946 when they left.
His connection to the city becomes more vivid. He sends me recordings about wandering to the hospital where his father stayed, to the apartment building where his father lived.
So last night I went for dinner in the old part of Belgrade, down by the Danube. And on the way home, I decided to stop by my father's apartment. And as I'm thinking about leaving, this man, Nicholas, walks up, and young man, and he says, oh, I recognize you, Branko Bozic? I said, yeah. And he says, I've seen you in the newspapers, and now here you are. And he lives in that building. I said, you live here? And he says, yeah. He says, please come in for a rakia. And then he says, you know what? I wonder what apartment your father died in. And I said, well, I don't know.
He and Nicholas went to see the superintendent, but he didn't know much. So Bob was on his way out of the building.
Suddenly the superintendent yells, come back, come back. My wife heard us talking. And she says, so if we go back upstairs, this is his wife, she doesn't speak English, and she's got this whole scrapbook of newspaper clippings. My father was in that apartment. That superintendent's apartment. They have news clippings. She says, I kept these clippings from when your dad died. And these were during the communist time, these clippings. They said bizarre things. Like for instance, my dad was rich, but they didn't claim that they stole the properties. They say he gambled it all away. They gambled all the money away that he had from his inventions and the property he had to sell. Well, they seized the properties. Everybody knows that, but whatever. So she shows me around the apartment, and she showed me the parlor room. She says, he probably died in here. Either way, when I do get the decision, I want to go back and sit down and have another rakia in the room that my father died in. And that'll sort of close the story for me, anyhow.
Bob sends a few more scattered memos here and there, stories of his adventures with Petar or of his travels to Sarajevo. And then, silence. I don't hear anything from him for weeks. Till one day, he texts me and tells me he's coming back to New York for a visit.
Terminal 1, right?
Yeah, Terminal 1. He's a big fella. Bald, Serbian looking. Here's Bob, looking good.
Hey, boys and girls.
Welcome home.
Come on in.
Come on in.
Here.
Oh, thank you very much. Is it Rocky? No, it's Gorky liquor.
Yeah, don't worry. You want a taste? Yeah, take a taste.
Is it homebrew?
It's homebrew. Yeah, I mean, you can buy it in stores, but most of it's homebrew. Go ahead. Is it strong?
Yep.
The 17th Street Prospect Park West. Yeah, right there.
I asked Bob to give me a quick rundown on where his claim stands. Frankly, with all the back and forth, this judge, that council, the city, the state, the party, I've lost track. It's a thing that is happening and yet isn't happening. It's more Quest than Grail.
I own the house, but they're still disputing it. Nobody wants to be responsible for saying yes.
Bob says he's already in talks with potential buyers of the house. He means to sell it. Says it's worth about $2 million. He's never really had any money, but still you get the feeling this one's not really about the cash. It's about blood.
Special. I'd phone Canada and put my cousin who speaks Serbian on it, and I wanted her to know that this, you know, to me it's sort of like the one child they did not keep is the one who's there fighting for it, you know, fighting for the house. The one of all the family, I'm the one in there. I'm trying to make the right decisions, trying to push the point and all that.
The one they didn't keep. That's the foster kid talking, the old runaway. This Belgrade house may not be home, but it does give him a real claim to his heritage, his history, his family name. It's almost like Bob's still trying to prove himself to parents who died years ago. But a lot of us do that. I guess my hope for Bob is that he gets the house once and for all and then moves on to whatever retirement might mean for him. On the other hand, maybe it's good for Bob to keep fighting. He's a fighter. Always was.
All right, man.
Well, I'll keep in touch with you.
Of course.
Yeah, come.
So, thanks, man.
You got a bottle of Rocky. What are you gonna
Rocky.
What are you
gonna I made out like a bandit.
See you whenever I see you.
New Yorker staff writer Nick Palmgarten talking with Bob Bozek.